Yud-Zayin Amid Beis, or in English is 34, six times in the bottom of the page. Last week, we were learning the way Rav Shimon learned out from a long pasuk about Bikurim, Maisa Sheni, about you can't eat it outside before you squirt the blood, you can't eat it after you shalai, all the various dinim. And Rav said that Rav Shimon, if you have babies, have them like Rav Shimon. And if you don't have them like Rav Shimon, don't have them. Rav Shimon was very great. So he said, he wanted to praise Rav Shimon. He says, if a mother should have babies, they should all be like Rav Shimon. And if not, she shouldn't have the kids. Huh. Now, it means nobody's born. Anyway, so the Gemara elaborated on this whole thing. And basically, what did Rav Shimon say? That if you eat it outside the wall, by Bikurim, you get whipped. By Maisa Sheni, you get whipped. I mean, all these various dinim that if you do eat them in the wrong times or in the wrong places, you're going to get whipped. And how did he learn it out? He said, because if Maisa Sheni, you get whipped, Bikurim, for sure you get whipped. It was called the Kal V'chomer. But the Gemara asks an interesting question. V'chi mazhirin min adin. Do you warn? Now we learned as follows. In order to get malchus, to get whipped for committing a sin, you need to be warned and you need the punishment. If you're not warned, meaning if the Torah doesn't say clearly you're not allowed to do it, and the witnesses don't tell you clearly before you're about to do it that you're not allowed to do it, you don't get whipped. Now there's a rule, what's called, what this whole thing we were learning before, is called a kal v'chomer. What does a kal v'chomer mean? In the English Siddur, it has a whole Megillah, what the definition of a kal v'chomer is. Kal v'chomer means it's simply easier and harder. What does it mean? If the easier law has such a law, so the stricter law for sure should have such a law. That's what's called a kal v'chomer. In other words, if you get whipped for ma'aser, bikurim which is stricter, for sure you should get whipped. That's what we were learning the whole time last week. There's a rule in the Gemara, you don't punish somebody from a kal v'chomer. Something which is derived from this easy, hard thing, you can't punish somebody for. Not only that, when it comes to warning a person to be considered a negative commandment, the Torah has to explicitly say it's forbidden. Just because you want to learn out that it's forbidden, I'll give you an example which is very clear to understand. The Torah says, you're not allowed to have relations with your daughter, and you're not allowed to have relations with your granddaughter. Okay. So basically the question is, if you can't have relations with your granddaughter, for sure not with your daughter. Right? It's logical. If you can't have relations with your granddaughter, for sure not with your daughter.
For a father,
yeah,
for a grandfather.
Obviously. So nevertheless, the Torah has to say it, because if we don't say it, so to speak, you can't learn it out. Because you can't say, because if a granddaughter, certainly the daughter. Because, why not? So the logic of it is very simple. A kal v'chomer, a person can make up on their own. You can make your own kal v'chomer. If you can make your own kal v'chomer, maybe it's not correct. If it's not correct, you can't do it. So now the Gemara says as follows. There's a rule, in order for something to be forbidden, it needs to be a warning. A kal v'chomer is not a good enough warning. If all these cases Rabbi Shimon mentioned before, he wants to give a malchus, and the malchus is coming from a kal v'chomer of the warning that it's forbidden, the Gemara asks, you can't do that. You can't learn out something is forbidden to punish somebody from a kal v'chomer. So the Gemara asks, v'chi mazirin min adin, can you give a warning from a kal v'chomer din as a kal v'chomer? Even according to the opinion that says, ancient minadin, you can punish somebody from a kal v'chomer, but a mazirin minadin, you can't warn him from a kal v'chomer. And we know that if you don't get warned, you can't get whipped. So how did the Gemara say before that Reb Shimon says all these things are forbidden to eat, whether it's outside of the time, outside of the wall, whatever, which is all derived from a kal v'chomer, if you can't warn somebody from a kal v'chomer to punish them? So he answers, Isura ba'alma. You're right. It doesn't mean you get whipped. It means it's forbidden. You're right. You can't get punished because the warning is coming from a Kal V'chomer. And if it's coming from a Kal V'chomer, you can't punish somebody from it. But it's still forbidden. Forbidden it is. But you wouldn't be punished. So the Gemara asks, V'amar Rava Bat Rava said, Zar Sha'achom Min Ha'ela. If a Zar is a person who's a non-Kohen, eats from a carbon Ela, Lefnei Zerika, before the squirting of the blood, and the Mizbeach, Chutz L'chayma, outside the wall, which both things are forbidden, L'Rab Shimon like a Chamesh. Rab Shimon says, you would get 5 Malkus. Why? Rab Shimon says an interesting case. You can eat one food and get 5 whips for it. Not 5 lashes, 5 times 39 lashes. What is the case? A non-Kohen who eats an Eila outside of Yerushalayim. No, he says, what are the 5 things? Number one, you're not allowed to eat outside Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to eat it before the blood is squirted on the Mizbeach. You're eating by a non-Kohen outside the temple courtyard. And number four, nobody's allowed to eat the animal. Because an ola means a burnt offering, even a Kohen is not allowed to eat it. So he says, it's interesting. The Gemara says, if you eat a certain bug, we learned before the Gemara, you can get 8 times lashes. Certain bugs. If you eat them, you're transgressing 8 negative commandments of the Torah that you would get whipped, let's say, 8 times.
Who did the whipping and the lash?
The courts.
The court? These were chosen people, judges, and what have you?
They weren't elected by the people, no.
No?
No.
So what, they proclaimed themselves?
Yeah, self-proclaimed judge.
Really?
Yeah. No.
If your father was one, then you could be one?
Sometimes. It says the father was worthy and the son was worthy, yeah. But they didn't just become.
And the Jews accepted that?
The Torah says you have a mitzvah to appoint dayanim. So the heads of the city appointed dayanim based on the classifications who a judge is allowed to be. So the Gemara what's the Gemara's question? You're telling me it's only forbidden, but you don't get malchus. Here Rava says, if you eat these karbanos that we spoke about before, you get whipped 5 times. So what do you mean you don't get whipped? It's just forbidden. Rava says, Rav Shimon said, you get whipped. So the Gemara answers, no. He doesn't mean 5 whippings. He means chamisha isurim aveir. It's 5 prohibitions. You know, it's forbidden 5 things. But you don't get whipped. Because anything you derive from a kal v'chomer, you cannot get whipped for. Why? Because you can't punish somebody because of a kal v'chomer. You could punish somebody, it says in the Torah clearly, don't eat chazer. If you eat chazer, the Torah says you get whipped. But you can't say, if the Torah says you can't eat chazer, I'll give you an example. A chazer is another interesting concept of this. A chazer, you know, in order to be kosher animal, you need 2 signs. Chews his cud and has split hooves. Right? So now, a chazer has kosher feet, but doesn't chew its cud. Now, somebody, L'cheder, can come along and say that if a chazer has 1 kosher sign, yet when you eat it, you get whipped. So if you eat an animal that has no kosher sign, he doesn't have any of the 2 kosher signs, for sure you get whipped. Yeah? Yet, if you look in the Chumash, the Torah says the animals that have no signs, you get whipped. Why does the Torah have to say it? Why don't you make a kal v'chomer? If a pig has 1 kosher sign, you get whipped. An animal with no kosher signs, for sure you should get whipped. But you can't punish somebody from a kal v'chomer.
How about eating chicken and milk as opposed to meat and milk?
It's rabbinic. Rabbinic lashes. You can't get biblical lashes only if you did a biblical sin. Somebody transgresses rabbinic sins, is called makas mardos. It's lashes for the rebellion. Not so much because you sinned, because you rebelled against the rabbis. The chacham. Now, meat and milk, the Torah doesn't say don't eat meat and milk. The Torah says, lo sevashel gedi b'chalei vimo. Don't cook a goat in his mother's milk.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, chickens don't have milk. So if you want to take it to biblically, the Torah says don't cook, and but one. Now really the Torah says don't cook. But the Torah says three times don't cook. There's three different places in Chumash that the Torah says don't cook the same pasuk. Lo sevashel gadi b'chalev imo. Don't cook a goat in its mother's milk. Why does the Torah say the exact same pasuk three times? The Torah doesn't have to repeat itself. One teaches us you're not allowed to cook it. That means if somebody cooks, they don't eat it. They cook meat and milk together, they get whipped. Secondly, you're not allowed to eat meat and milk. Thirdly, you can't even benefit from meat and milk. Okay? Now, somebody could say, again, the same thing. If the Torah would say, don't benefit, for sure eating, you'd get whipped. But you can't do such a thing again, the Kal Vachomer. The Torah has to say clearly. Over there, the Torah says, now, chicken's mother doesn't have milk. Right? So therefore, biblically, chicken is not considered meat. As far as meat and milk go. The Chachamim said, because chicken looks like meat, you can't eat it either. Yeah, that it's forbidden. Like the Gemara is saying over here, it's forbidden. You did an Aveda. You just can't punish somebody on that basis. Sure. There are a lot of laws in Chumash that we derive from a Kal Vachomer. Sure.
Rabbi,
not to punish somebody, that's the only exception.
Was there somebody in Jewish law and Jewish history that was responsible for saying the Jews cannot eat milk and meat at the same time?
The Torah, yeah.
Torah?
God is responsible.
God, okay.
You ever hear him?
Uphold the law, maybe? Who's going to uphold the law?
No, he wants to know who made the law.
Who made the law?
Tell you a little secret. All the laws in our religion were made by God. People didn't make the laws like people think.
I never did that, but I'm trying to figure out why when there are millions of people who have eaten meat and milk at the same time.
But the Torah says for a Jew it's not forbidden. I mean, only for a Jew it's forbidden.
I know.
It's not forbidden for a guy.
I know.
A guy can eat cheeseburgers all he wants.
Why should the Jew be forbidden?
Because we're special.
But we can't buy cheeseburgers for our workers.
Because you can't benefit from it. That's benefiting. You can't give meat and milk to your dog to eat. You can't give meat and milk as a gift to somebody. You know that many people have dogs. You ever hear people have dogs, especially in California? Or they have cats. If you take a look at the cat food and the dog food, a lot of time it's a mixture of meat and milk in there. If there's a mixture of meat and milk in dog food, you're not allowed to give it to your dog because you're benefiting from it. That's only though, halacha says, if it's kosher meat that's mixed with milk. For instance, chazer and milk, you could benefit from. Beef, cow meat, chicken, ox meat, whatever, you know, bull meat, whatever. That with milk is forbidden to benefit from. Doesn't matter. No. But it has to be a kosher type of animal. But if it's pig, mush, if you have in the dog food, it said pig's meat and milk. You can give it to your dog. But if it says beef, which usually is not pig, beef, then you can't give it if it has milk. You can't feed it to your dogs. You can't give it away as a gift because you're benefiting from it. If I give you a gift, we're getting good vibes, good relationship. You can't do that.
Can you give non-kosher chocolate to a boy?
No. No. You know why not? Halacha says, because the guy who's getting it from you thinks it's kosher, and the guy might give it to another Jew. The guy will give it to a Jew and thinking it's kosher because he got it from a Jew. Understand?
Kratzmech.
Yoshka, any different, you mean?
No, I'm saying like
he's no. How do you know? There's two. Okay, so now the Gemara's basic answer is, you're right, because it's only a Kavah Chomer, you can't get punished, but it's still forbidden. So the Gemara asks, but in our Mishnah, that we learned at the beginning of the parak, it says, Elohein Aleikin, that these are the ones who get Malkus. So the Mishnah says he get whipped. So the question is, if Rav is learning it, I'll be. But Makav HaChemer, how can you get Malkus? So on top of the page, the Gemara answers, and Yud Ches, Elokra Yaseiruhu, it's not a Kav HaChemer. The Gemara is answering different. All those cases Rav said that you get whipped is not from a Kal V'chaymer. It's from an extra pasuk. And the rule is, if you learn something out of an extra pasuk, then you could get whipped. Because it's not a Kal V'chaymer anymore. Kal V'chaymer is pure logic. If easy is like this, strict for sure is like that. That's logic. You can't punish somebody on logic. Why? Because your logic might be wrong. But if you learn out something from an extra pasuk, so then it's not a logic anymore, and then you could punish the person. So the Gemara answers, all these things that we thought were derived only from a Kal V'chaymer, it's not true. There is an extra pasuk. And because there's an extra pasuk, we learn out that you can get whipped. Yeah, but what do you care if the guy's not going to get hurt by it? No, you're not matter usually a Kal V'chaymer, you're not going to be permitting it most of the time.
It's not permitting, it's most of the time not.
Right. Right, so stricter anyway. It's usually. Because what are you saying? If the easy is this din of strictness, the stricter thing for sure is stricter. You can't say, if the easy thing is easy, the stricter thing for sure is easy. That doesn't work. Kal V'chaymer is to make the thing stricter. If the easier din is strict, the stricter din for sure is strict. But it's not enough to punish somebody. Okay, so the Gemara says, what's the pasuk? Alokra Yaseiruhu, it's an extra pasuk. Why? Because it says in the pasuk, by this whole long Megillah that Rav Shimon learned, it says, Veveis Hashem, you should bring your Bikurim, you should eat it before God, b'amokim, in the place of before Hashem. So if so, why doesn't the Torah just write, you can't eat it? Okay? The Torah should have said, the Torah should have said, you shouldn't eat it. Them. What is the Gemara saying? Why don't you sit here? It's a small room. I need. No, pretend you're looking at yourself.
There's only two of me.
There's two of you. You what the guy said. Two of me, the guy need a minion. The Shabbat. Yeah. Me and you, is you and me is two and two is four. Six, look in the mirror. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Well, I tell you, these guys with beards cause more trouble. It used to be they were so nice. They were so gentle.
Okay.
Nathan doesn't, he likes when I'm on there.
Yeah, we don't know if anybody else does. But I just want you to know that you're world famous. From your questions between Mincha Maariv, you're world famous. The Gemara says like this. Let the Torah, in other words, basically, the Torah says like this. You should eat these and these things, and then it says in the Torah, don't eat these and these things. Why does the Torah have to enumerate all the things again? Let the Torah just say, don't eat them. Okay? So, mid the mefarish bo rachman olamali, why does the Torah have to repeat each one? The Gemara says, what is the purpose? To give a negative commandment for each one. Meaning as follows. Not only is it a kal v'chaymer, but there's an extra pasuk. The Torah says, eat, be kud, and be in the presence of God. And then the Torah says, don't eat, and it enumerates. Masa Dugan Chotirash, it goes through all the things you're not allowed to eat. The Torah could have said in one word, don't eat them. Them means them. Why does the Torah have to enumerate each one? So each one is an extra pasuk, extra word. That teaches us that the Torah forbids each one, that you're not allowed to eat it the way Rav Shimon derived it, whether one is before you sprinkle the blood, whether one is outside Yerushalayim, whether one is outside the Beis HaMikdash, whatever it is, it's an extra pasuk. So therefore you're not punishing from a Kal V'Chomer, you're punishing because there's an extra negative commandment that says don't eat them. And that's why you can get Malkus. Okay, now the Gemara starts again. Okay? Gufa, this is a new piece of Gemara for the latecomers. You can start again. On page Yud Ches, 5 lines in the top. Gufa, we learned before in the Gemara, Amar of Rava said the following statement. Zar Sha'ochel Min Ha'ela Lifnei Zrika, a non-Kohen, who eats a carbon oila before the blood is squirted, outside the walls of Yerushalayim, L'Rab Shimon, like a chomish. You get 5 malchus. Why? Like we learned before in the Gemara. What are the 5? Number 1, he ate it outside Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to eat any carbon outside Yerushalayim. Number 2, before you squirt the blood on the Mizbeach, you're not allowed to eat any carbon. Number 3, it's eaten by a non-Kohen. Number 4, it's outside the base of Migdash courtyard. Fifthly, carbon oila is a burnt offering. Nobody's allowed to eat it. So Rava said a statement that if a stranger, meaning a non-Kohen, who eats a carbon oila outside of Yerushalayim before the blood of the animal was squirted, he gets 5 sins. That means you get whipped. 5 times 39, if you're able to handle it. 5 malchus.
So 1 malchus, 39 lashes?
Yeah. It's not a credit system. Pay it out. No.
Did most
malchus? No, malchus had to be whatever the person is able to. It has to be done at one time. Because once he gets malchus, as the Torah says, V'nikla achicha le'inecha, once he was whipped, he's your brother again.
Also, the death penalty, they have to do it right away. They can't let the guy linger like 10 years waiting to die.
You have to kill him the same day you make judgment. There's no death row in halacha. No, in halacha, it's because it's torture, it's cruelty. You know, a guy who's sentenced to death, and he says, okay, I got a year. Every day he's like, okay, and I'm closer to death, closer. It's torture. That's why Beis Din, at the end of the day, never made a ruling of death penalty. Because they couldn't kill the guy right away. So they had to wait for the judgment the next day because the judgment and the killing had to be done on the same day.
Did it happen a lot?
Huh? The Gemara says once in 7 years. One opinion was once in 70 years. No, if it happened once in 7 years, you were called a killing court. Because they made the witnesses so crazy. They made the witnesses so crazy that they didn't want them. But you know, this is an interesting concept. I mean, we're learning Malkus, there's a sikha from the Rebbe. We mentioned this in the past. In Jewish law, there's no punishment of jail term. There's no punishment of jail term. The only time they locked people up in Chumash is they didn't know what punishment to get him yet, or to keep a guy off the street. When the guy was never proven, but they know the guy did it, and they can't punish him, they can't kill him, so they keep him off the street, they locked him up, you know, things like that. But there was no sentencing of jail in Torah law. You either got whipped and finished, you got killed and finished, or else you got nothing. That was it. There was no, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years.
Also monetary.
Yeah, there was monetary, but that's financial. I'm talking about criminal judgment. Criminal judgment was either Malkus or death. That's it. There was no jail term.
Rabbi,
and one second, the Rebbe explained why. Why Taki, isn't it? Because the purpose, the Rebbe explains, the purpose of creation of a person was that he should accomplish something. That he should accomplish something. In jail, you're basically taking away your freedom to be able to live like a human being. You can't function, you can't work, you can't to have a family, you can't do the things that a normal person is supposed to have. So therefore, Torah says the whole purpose of a person's existence is to be productive. In jail, The Rebbe also mentioned that you become more hardcore, like we know in the jail with all these chuliganis, you become more hardcore. So not only do you become, the Rebbe said, number one, they should have, teaching them how to, rehabilitation. No, you need rehabilitation to rehabilitate them and things. But to put somebody in jail is counterproductive to the whole purpose. So the Rebbe said, in Torah law, sometimes a person did such a crime that he lost the right to be productive and to be able to continue living. So Bezdin killed you. If not, you got whipped. But to put somebody in jail that should be counterproductive, the Rebbe explains that doesn't exist in Torah. Now, once somebody is punished, like we said, once he's punished, he becomes your brother, he becomes a full tzaddik again. He becomes, so to speak, cleansed for the Aveira. So therefore, the punishment had to be done immediate, even by Malchus. Like you said, if a guy has five times Malchus, so give him 39 today, and 30, even if he's like Shimshon, not like you, the real Shimshon, the biblical Shimshon. You know, he can handle, you know, give him 39 today, 39 tomorrow, 39 the next day. You're not allowed to do it, because once the sentencing is of whipping, once he gets the amount that he could handle, that's it. He's done. You don't prolong sentence. So therefore, according to Halacha, you have to give sentence. If the guy said you lost your right to life because of the crime you did, then he has to be taken right away, that day. The difference was that if a guy is being taken out to death, they found him guilty, and they're taking him out to death, and somebody comes running and said, 1 minute, I have a schus for the guy, you know, I have a merit. So Bezin says, okay, back to court, to start all over again. And if they take him out and somebody screams, I have it, go back to court as long as it takes. Once Bezin proclaims somebody innocent, and a guy comes, no, I have a thing that he's guilty, Bezin doesn't accept it anymore. Right. Because why is it that a killing Bezdin, a Bezdin kills once in 7 years, it's a Mishnah, by the way, it's Sanhedrin, it's all over the place. Why is it that a Bezdin that kills somebody, one opinion says 7 years, that's what the Chachamim hold. Another opinion says once in 70 years. Rabbi Kiva said, if I would be in the Bezdin, nobody would ever get killed. It would make the witnesses so crazy, right? So they tell to Rabbi Kiva, yeah, that's why there's so many murderers, because of people like you, that they know they can get off easily if you would be in the Bezdin. But why is it already? Why do Bezdin try to find a schus not to kill the guy? So it's also very logical, internal logic. A guy's dead already. Marshal Reuven kills Shimon, yeah? Shimon's dead. Finished. Okay? Now, you want to kill another person? You want to kill another person. Especially like we learned at the beginning of the Masechta when he explained that if Hashem didn't want Shimon to die, he wouldn't have died anyway. Obviously. When Reuven kills Shimon, if God didn't want Shimon to die, Shimon wouldn't have died. Correct? The bullet would have missed him. He would have, whatever, he would have lived. So the fact that Shimon died, in reality, Hashem wanted him to die. Why is Reuven getting killed? Not because Shimon died. Shimon died because Shimon was supposed to die. Reuven is punished because he did an act of murder. It's nothing to do with Shimon. God says, don't kill. You killed. It's nothing to do with Shimon. Shimon was supposed to die because his time came to go. That's why God allowed him to be killed. Reuven is not killed that Shimon died. Reuven is killed because he did an act of murder that the Torah says don't murder. Now, Shimon's dead already. Shimon was supposed to die. You want to kill another person. So if there's no way out, so to speak, there's no way out, he definitely did it, the Torah says then you got to go. You did an act of murder, you got to go. If there's a way of finding a merit that he shouldn't die, that he shouldn't be productive, and we know the importance of life in Torah. You know, whoever saves one life is like saving the entire world and all that. So the life of a Jew is extremely important. So Hashem said, listen, whatever we can do legally in the system to get the guy out from being killed, that's what you have to do. It's very logical, by the way. If you think of, if you believe in God, and you believe in divine providence, and you believe that Shimon was supposed to die, and Reuven is punished for killing, you know what I mean? And the whole concept of life is to be productive, and you're taking away that ability from Reuven by killing him. So when you try to find merit, you have to try to find merit. What is that?
And
supposed
they can't prove him to be...
So rehabilitate him that he does become. Innocent. What do you mean he's not a productive human being?
I'm saying that his history has proven that he's not a productive human being. He killed this person. There was maybe...
Who is to decide who is a productive human being?
Up to that point.
Who is to decide up to that
right,
point?
He could have it later.
Only Hashem? No, even up to that point. Do we know what he really did? Do we know what his particular mission in life was?
But
we don't know.
Did an act, it was obviously an act, couldn't prove it or wasn't proven, and then it just...
Then if God wants... No, if a guy...
If Hashem wants, he's going to take him.
No, Rashi says in the beginning of Mishpatim from the Gemara, that what happens if somebody kills somebody intentionally, but nobody caught him? Or the only witnesses were non-kosher witnesses, two brothers, men, women, people that are not kosher witnesses. So basically the guy's going scot-free. Everybody knows he did it. Or even if they don't, he did an ambush. Nobody saw it, right? God knows he did it. God has his ways of getting him killed. Like Rashi says in Chumash, to Moshul, that, you know, if a guy is on top of a ladder and falls on top of a guy at the bottom of the ladder, so he has to run, the whole Gemara Makkos, he has to run to the city of refuge, yeah? So Rashi says, what's the scenario, basically? The guy at the bottom of the ladder that got killed was somebody who was supposed to die anyway. Because he killed somebody, maybe. He killed somebody and nobody ever caught him. So he was supposed to die. So this guy fell on him, he killed him. So he got his punishment. He got his due. And now this guy has to go to city refuge. Yeah.
Going back to Shimshon HaMelech.
A Geber.
He had his hair all that time? Or were they sheared?
I didn't actually see him. In the pictures, I think he has hair.
Well, when Shimshon HaMelech had his hair, he was powerful. The strongest man in the world.
Yeah, he had a long beard, that's why.
One more quick question, Rabbi. No, seriously. 39 whip lashes.
Yeah.
When you get whipped. Didn't quite a number of those who got whipped die from that?
No, they evaluated them beforehand, how many they can handle.
Oh.
Some guys could have gotten away with 5 or 3 or 2, whatever. No.
He's 39. And the doctor estimated he can get only 5.
He gets 5, that's it.
Well, that's it.
It's not a layaway plan. I said it's not a credit card. You pay it in installments. What?
When the Gemara says 5, does that mean 5 times 39? Or just
5 times 39.
Oh, it means 5 times 39.
Yeah. Why should he get with 5 times? I mean 5.
What should you add?
What was the most on my birthday? How about that?
The most is feasible. Or... I can't imagine somebody had even handling 5 times 39. I mean,
39 probably a lot.
Yeah. 39 was the max. No, the guy's hit. He gave that. So it was a thick strap, 3 inches wide. The back, yeah. The back and the front. It's not like we do Malchus Yom Kippur like that, no.
Did Moshe Pippick ever tell you that he used to be chosen to do the whippings where he came from?
I was there with him. He whipped me.
No, he wouldn't touch you.
Okay, so the Gemara says... Rav said, according to Rav Shim, come back to the Gemara, that this non-Kohen who eats the meat from the Oila before the whatever, he gets whipped 5 times. So the Gemara says, why only 5? I'll show you some more things you should get whipped for. There's more sins that the guy transgressed. So the Gemara says, the little Kanami, let him also get whipped. There's another pasuk that says, Vizar lo yoichal ki kedeshem. A stranger, meaning a non-Kohen, cannot eat it. This is an additional pasuk, because they're holy. Okay? Since it says clearly that a non-Kohen could eat it. A non-Kohen cannot eat it. That's an additional sin. Since you get whipped 6 times. So the Gemara says, no. Hani mili heichad l'Kohen amchazi. That's only, when does that pasuk say a Yisrael cannot eat the meat? Is when a Kohen is allowed to, then they say a Yisrael or a Levi can't. But in the case where even a Kohen can't, so and everybody's equal, nobody's allowed to eat it. So you can't make him obligated 6 times Malchus, he still only gets 5 times. So the Gemara asks another question though. It says in the pasuk as follows. Meat torn in the field, you should not eat. Now the simple meaning of the pasuk is not what the Gemara is going to say. Now I'll explain in a second. Which means, kiven shiyotze basa chutzen mechitzasi, as soon as meat goes outside of his boundaries, whatever the boundaries are, outside Yerushalayim, outside the base of Mikdash, lurki you get whipped. Meaning as follows. There's a pasuk that says, don't eat meat in the field. What do you mean, don't eat meat? Trade for meat in the field. What does it mean in the field? The Gemara says, what does it mean? Meat that was supposed to be eaten inside Yerushalayim, or inside the base of Mikdash, and you ate it outside in the fields, it's forbidden. So that's another case we should get whipped. What's the simple meaning of the pasuk? You know that when we shecht meat, you know you have to check the lungs, you have to check the animal, you have to do what's called bedikas. The sheichet has to do the internal and external examination of the animal. That's why, if you ever see the acronym for a sheichet, many times they write shub, shin vav beis, which stands for sheichet ubeidek. He shechts, and he checks the inside of the animals. The whole concept of glatt kosher is that the lungs are smooth. How do you know if the lungs are smooth? The guy has to stick his hand into the animal and actually feel around the lung of the animal to make sure it's smooth, if there's any growths, or whatever it is. There's many, many checkings of the animal that the sheikh has to check. They take it out, you have to stick your stats up, you have to stick it in. The guy sticks his hand in. Now, what's the difference? You shechted the animal. What's the big deal? The answer is, there's something called a trefa. Nevela, you ever hear there's a word nevela, and there's a word trefa. We use the word today in English, you know, it's trefe. It's really not a correct word. Nevela means an animal who died without shechita. A carcass of an animal. The banana, a cow, kosher animal, just died. No. Huh? Whatever. Yeah, animals die without shechita. An animal dies, it's a nevela. Or if the shechita wasn't done properly, so therefore you didn't have shechita, so it's a nevela. You're not allowed to eat it. Then there's a trefa. A trefa is an animal that, what? No. A trefa is an animal that you shecht it properly, but the animal has an illness or a blemish that would not allow the animal to live a year on its own. To live trefa. Trefa literally means an animal which was torn apart. Torov, Taraf, Yosef. Yosef was ripped apart. Trefa means, in Chumash, trefa in Hebrew means, Torov means the animal was ripped apart. The classic example, what the Torah means, is when a lion rips apart a calf, so because the animal is ripped apart and has blemishes and cuts and breaks and all that, the animal is not going to be able to live for a year. So it's accepted, so to speak, from Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, that an animal that's going to die within a year, now you hear a little bit about with the mad cow stuff, they say the animals that can't stand on their own feet, you know, are more prone to be the sick cows. Yeah, but in America, they kill them, they give them to eat anyway. But, no, not with the matka b'chal, animals that are sick, they don't care, they shech them and they... According to Torah, the concept of a trefa means, even if the shechita was done properly, but the animal has an illness or a break or an infection or growths or missing limbs, whatever, that the animal wouldn't have been able to live for another year, it's called trefa. So normally, the pasuk is basa basada trefa. But the simple meaning of the pasuk is a meat that even if you shecht it, but it's treifa, meaning it's torn, it's not going to live for a year, you're not allowed to eat it. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. Over here, the Gemara learns another thing from it also. That because if the Torah wants to tell us basa basada treifa, if the Torah wants to tell you don't eat treifa meat, the Torah could have said basa treifa leisachelu. Who cares if it's in the field or in the house? So Rashi says in Chumash, you're right, but most of the time, where do you have a treifa animal? In the field, because that's where lions, you know, the bigger animal. So the Torah uses the word sad, but the Gemara takes it deeper. And the Gemara says, why is Taka the Torah using the word basada? Because the Torah is teaching us a new law. That any animal, any carbon, the Gemara is using it now for carbonis, any carbon which was taken out of the jurisdiction of the place where it's allowed to be eaten, you're not allowed to eat it. So the Gemara's question is, we're talking about a case where a Zod ate the oila before the squirting of the blood. Outside Yerushalayim, he gets whipped five. The Gemara says, but there's a sixth. Don't eat basa basada treifa. That if you take meat outside of the place, the Torah says you're also not allowed to eat it. So l'cheira, this is a sixth lav, and you should get whipped six times. So the Gemara answers, you're right, but. No, not yet. Hani mili, this is only heicha de bifnim chazi. Meaning is this. The Gemara learns, when does the Torah say if you take meat out, it's sinful to eat it? That's when inside you are allowed to eat it, but you took it out. This meat of an oila, you're not allowed to eat anywhere. So there's no difference inside or outside. In other words, the Torah says, meat of a carbon that you're allowed to eat inside. So if you take it outside, it's a sin. But meat that you're not allowed to eat inside either, then inside and outside is the same thing. So there's no difference. So Gemara says, you can't include this as another additional negative mitzvah to give him whipped because it doesn't apply here. I'll give you an example. A kohen is restricted. A kohen cannot marry a divorcee. Yeah? Obviously, a kohen cannot marry a non-Jewish woman also. Right? But that's not unique for a kohen. That's unique for all Jews. Right? It's unique for all Jews. So it's no difference between a kohen and a regular Jew as far as that sin goes. Right? A sin that applies to everybody, so a kohen is not any different than anybody else. For instance, a sin that a kohen does that applies only to a kohen, he's not allowed to duchen. If it's a kohen that always goes to cemeteries, let's say, right? He's not allowed to duchen. Not bichat kohanim. Why? Because he's transgressing the sins that privileged him as a kohen, that he's holy, that he can't go to cemeteries. So if he keeps going to cemeteries, so then it's forbidden. That's something one that, you see, he's a sinning with that. Right? So then you're not allowed to, so he gets a sin. So he can't do bichas kohanim, yeah? If a kohen eats chazer, he's allowed to duchen. He's allowed to do birchas kohenim. I'm not saying he should go eat chazer, but a kohen who eats chazer could do birchas kohenim. Why? Because it's not a sin designated especially for kohenim. It's a sin for all Jews. There's no difference. There's an interesting shaila. I once said this. I'm not saying what the halacha is because it's very complicated. If a kohen is married to a divorcee, yeah, you can't give him kohen. Can't give him kohen. The first aliyah, kohen. You know, the kohen gets the first aliyah. So if a kohen is married to a divorcee that he's not allowed to marry, you can't give him kohen. He loses the privilege. Yeah? If a kohen is married to a shiksa, you maybe could. Question was not so simple. The question, according to many opinions, if any Jew is married to a shiksa, he can't give him an aliyah. But I'm saying, let's say you could. Right? In fact, I once had a case, interesting case, a kohen can't marry a convert either. Right? A kohen married a convert, but she was a conservative or reformed convert. Okay? And that was the only kohen in the shul. So now the question is, can he get kohen? No, so the question, if she would be a convert, he couldn't. But the fact that it's not a real conversion, so she's a real shiksa, so he might be able to. That means
that's contradictory.
He's better off.
That's contradictory.
Why?
On the one hand,
Let me explain you one thing. A kohen who transgresses sins designated for kohenim only cannot dichen, as you would say. Yeah? Now, marrying a shiksa is not uniquely for a kohen. It's for every Jew. The many opinions that say any person who's married to a shiksa he can't give an aliyah to. That's a different story.
If she's a convert, that doesn't count, that she became Jewish?
A kohen cannot marry a convert.
Okay. I didn't write the laws. I didn't know that.
If it's a kohen that constantly goes to the cemetery, can you give him the first problem?
No. What?
No, but there are people, I remember, I was just listening to...
By the way, that's if he knows, hello. That's if he knows you're not allowed to, I mean...
Zhenhai.
Yes, he doesn't know anything. That's what he said, that's why he just said, if he knows.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, because there are people on Mechala Shabbos...
Right, but I said that's why I was speaking over you.
You know what Mechala Shabbos means?
He's a scholar.
You're brilliant.
Okay. What? Sure. Usually the Sheikh has to know the Bedikas, sure. Sure. Because he's a good many times the only guy. Of course. Usually it's part of hard work, so they have one guy shachting, one guy checking, then they switch, one guy shachs, one guy checks, and then they...
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Sure, Sheikh has to know Bedikah. How can he pass Shechit if he doesn't know Bedikah?
The guy's learning Shechit for Oifus.
So then he can't shecht meat. Also, even then you have a Shechichim checking the chickens.
Yeah, but, right.
So you still
turn... And then there's the whole tape.
Yeah, but shechita, you have to know treifis in order to be able to shecht. It's like a doctor is going to do surgery on his stomach, but he doesn't know what a stomach is.
He wouldn't be a doctor.
No, that's exactly the same case.
Rabbi, he wouldn't be a doctor.
They once brought a chicken to a Rav to ask a shayla. You know, so the Rav knew the halacha, but he didn't know the chicken. So he says, if this is a stomach, what they showed him, he said, if this is the stomach, it's treif. But he didn't know if it was the stomach. But he said, if this, what you're showing me is the stomach, it's treif. It's like, oh, if this is the brain you're showing me, I could do surgery. I mean, you can't, how can you do that?
To become a shocker, you have to learn all
this. Of course.
I know.
We're going to make you a shocker. Might you put that?
See the button, before they're going to take it.
They have to learn Tereshit, sure they have to learn. To know what's good and what's not good. Okay, so now the Gemara asks, all the way at the two lines at the bottom of the page, the little Konami, because the Rabbi Eliezer, Luchedis should also get whipped according to what Rabbi Eliezer did. Why? The Amr Rabbi Eliezer says, it says in the Pasuk, Lo Yeochel, don't eat it, because Kedishu, that because it's holy. Meaning, like he says, what does it mean? Kol shebekedish pasul, anything which is in holiness. In karbanis pasul, ba'alitin, ba'akosilitin, leisas al-achilasei, the Torah adds an additional prohibition for the eating. Meaning, anytime a carbon becomes pasul, you're not allowed to eat it also. Okay? Now, once you take karbanis like an eilah, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, it automatically becomes disqualified. Once it becomes disqualified as a carbon, you can't bring it back in to burn it. If somebody shechted in the Ola, let's say, right? This burnt offering. They shechted it. Normally, what do you do with it? You take the whole animal and put it on the Mizbeach to burn. What happens if they didn't? And the guy takes it out of the Beis HaMikdash. The second it was taken out, is automatically disqualified already. He can't bring it back in and burn it on the Mizbeach. So Rabbi Lazar says, we learn now from a Pasuk, that anything that became disqualified to burn, you're not allowed to eat. Over here it became disqualified to burn, and the guy ate it. So why isn't there an additional negative commandment? So he says as follows. Hani Mili, the same thing like we said before. This Pasuk is only referring to Heicha Dekeidem Pisul Lichazik. If before it became disqualified, you were allowed to eat it. So then we say when it became disqualified, you're not allowed to eat it. This carbon oila, which is a burnt offering, you're not allowed to eat it even inside. It was never permitted to be eaten. So if it's never permitted to be eaten, so you can't add an additional lav once it's taken out. You can't add a lav on a lav. You can't add negative on negative. And in fact, this is the din we said before. We're talking about the dog food. If the animal is kosher food, and you mix it with milk, you can't benefit from it. If it's pig's meat, chazer, that you mix with milk, you could benefit from it. Why? Because once it's treif for chazer, you can't make it more treif by making it meat and milk. If it's kosher meat, and you add milk, you can make a new concept called meat and milk.
What about the pig and its own milk?
Well, you can't eat it anyway, but it's not meat and milk.
But that's two different halakhah.
It's not meat and milk.
Commandment.
It's not. It's one. Yeah. Don't eat chazer. Anything that comes from a treif animal is treif. Ostrich eggs are treif because an ostrich is treif, so their eggs are treif, right? Sturgeon roe, caviar, is treif because the fish is treif, so their eggs are treif. That's what probably say caviar is the eggs, right? So the eggs are treif. Why? Because if camel's milk is treif, because a camel is treif, the milk is treif. Pig's milk is treif because, so, but it's all because the Torah says don't eat chazer, so anything that comes out of a chazer is treif. If a chazer would lay an egg, the egg would also be treif. You know what I mean? In fact, the Gemara, there's a whole question, and there was a tumult about it years ago. They found the kosher pig, remember? The kosher pig, remember?
Barbarossa.
They found it, yeah. They found it, they later they found it as a whole Baba Meister. Yeah. If you have technically, Lamashul, if Mr. and Mrs. Chazer give birth to Pig Jr., and Pig Jr. chooses cud and has split hoofs. That's a freakish case. I mean, there's a lot of freaky things around, yeah? I said, let's say Mr. and Mrs. Pig give birth to Pig Jr., and Pig Jr. chooses cud and has split hoofs. Can you eat Jr. Pig? The answer is no. Why? Because anything that comes from a pig, any offshoot, any milk, any children, if it's treif, everything that comes from it is treif. Even if this new pig, you know, will chew its cud, it would still not be allowed to be eaten. So it's not that it's an additional sin. So pig's milk is treif because a pig is treif. So it's not a separate commandment. It's like eating pig and pig. You're eating pig and milk. But there's no din of meat and milk by a treifa animal. If you have a kosher animal, then the Torah says if you mix meat and milk together, it becomes treif. But once it's treif, you can't make it more treif. Can't make it more treif. Yeah.
Outside of the courtyard. Is it
becomes a din of chum, but you're not allowed to eat it.
He's still not allowed to eat
it. No.